Chris Hughton. And it says here, Hughton achieved so much during his time at Brighton. We all know that. That's why he's interested to us. And not only that, he was a thoroughly decent bloke. That's evident to us all as well. He understood the city, spoke well, ultimate professional. But they're saying here, the second half of 2018-19 season was bad as any of them can remember. Two wins in 18 managers would cost most managers their jobs. And they say throwing defeats against relegated sides like Fulham and Cardiff and the failure to beat Watford, Burnley, Bournemouth and Newcastle at home. And you had a manager who was skating on thin ice. It's when football fans move from anger to sarcasm, you know something needs to change. And they cite, going back to 2006, Mark McGee, former City player, as you'll know, long time ago, was a dead man walking from the moment the with deep, what a tip that was, began celebrating Stoke Fit his third, fourth and fifth goals, as I say, back in 2006. And this guy goes on to say the performances in those final 18 games of the 2018-19 season, the tactical blunders, the players appearing to down tools after approaching Hughton to play a more attacking style, all of that points to the fact that had Hughton remained in charge for this season, they reckon Brighton would have been relegated. And they say, for that reason alone, Bloom, their chairman, made the right decision to sack Hughton as Brighton boss. So there's a few things there that, you know, you look at the cautiousness that he's being accused of adopting, Yeah, he had his critics down there, right? So, you know, that's, you know, he's nobody's perfect. But other than Alex Ferguson and maybe Jurgen Klopp, there's probably no manager that could be appointed record of failure somewhere. Now, Ian, you've just joined me. I said in this was going to be a welcome Chris Hughton special when we thought yesterday it was going to be announced today. It's not turned out to be the day we expected, has it?
No, not really. I didn't expect the announcement today, but I expected it over the weekend and a little bit of radio silence in between. But unfortunately, we've been treated to some information from Gregor McGregor or Bristol Live today that said it's not a done deal and they're still interviewing seven or eight candidates, which I think has been met with pretty universal condemnation from many City fans. I haven't seen anything on Twitter or any forum that has suggested that City fans have said, oh, that's a good idea. Apart from one or two comments, which could have been tongue-in-cheek or sarcastic. So, I think it's... I don't think it's good news. And if I was Chris Hughton, I'd be looking around for something else. Are you still there, Dave?
Let me just put a different microphone in because this one's not working.
Can you hear me, Ian? Have you got me?
Did you get any of what I just said?
I got absolutely everything that you said just then, and I was
Okay.
Substitute earpiece. Tom's joined us in the room. Yeah, can you hear us, Tom? Yeah, you there as well?
Yeah.
Let's just read that piece that Gregor wrote a short while ago because I read that and I thought, oh my lord, talk about a sycophantic, don't want to upset anybody down at the club. And it was really how we do the right thing. And it says, you know, he's written it as an explainer, right? As an explainer to, look, don't worry. Why the... And it's all this... I was thinking, oh, it was just making me sick. And he was going on to say, Chris Hughton was in Bristol on Friday to have his interview with Bristol City, but the former Brighton and Hove Albion boss is not the only contender. As reported this week, blah, 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 City supporters are impatient, blah, 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 especially with so much to decide on, so little time to do it. Obviously, we'll come on that in a minute. Training starts in 2.5 weeks. But he goes on to say, the board knows it's vital as a club aim to sort of get the hiring decision right. But it says that the Lansdowne, are very honourable in their business dealings. Perhaps they could even be regarded as a little old-fashioned in the best sense of that term. And they go to quote Neil Warnock, Bristol City were impeccable with how they dealt with the Reed and Marlon Pack transfer deals last season. Similarly, one EFL club owner we spoke to highly praised the work of Bristol City last summer in buying a player from the Rollins and all those involved in the all those involved, including the owners. And he says, Bristol City do things the right way and with class. That is part of the holdup. The club has been determined to make this the most thorough recruitment process it can, including waiting until the end of the season to speak to candidates already in jobs. CEO Mark Ashton is now speaking to a shortlisted candidates with their interest confirmed. I mean, guys, let me put this one to Tom, first time on Forever Bristol City. I mean, oh, God, are we supposed to lap that stuff up? It sounds like the sort of stuff that comes out on the television, on the national news, when they're trying to say that coronavirus hasn't happened. What are your thoughts, Tom?
It seems like we're coming across a bit too nice, to be honest, rather than just going out and getting Chris Ewan. Like, what was in... Apparently, was in touch with Stephen Gerrard this week. There's been that many managers linked with us now, Stephen Gerrard and you and the main two, I believe. But I think we're going about our business too nice. We seem to be sort of that nice club. We do business the right way. I'd rather just be ruthless and go for it and get Chris Hughton and go for the Premier League.
I mean, you said, Ian, just a moment ago that if you were Hughton, you'd tell us to do one. I mean, I cannot believe that, you know, we're even contemplating Robbie Fowler. Right. If we're not going to entertain John Terry for reasons that he's not proven as a manager at all and he's not that great and he's got his other history off the field that's unappealing to corporate Bristol City, are they really going to consider taking on a manager who mocked his being done for cocaine by sniffing along the touchline after he scored a goal for Liverpool in his last match? I mean, I find that ridiculous that he's even being considered and he's in the final seven. What do you say to that, Ian?
Well, we don't know who the final seven or eight are, Dave.
Well, no, we don't.
We know Chris Hughton's won. Robbie Fowler's applied. Well, I could have applied. You could have applied. Mm. It doesn't mean to say that we'd be under consideration. So I think we need to be careful. And while we're at it, I don't know that Robbie Fowler was done for cocaine. It was rumoured that he used to do cocaine, and that's why he did that goal line celebration. After he scored a hat trick or something. So, look, I think we need the DNA for me, as Mark Ashton would say, is an experienced manager, a winner, someone who's been there, seen it, and done it. And Hughton falls into that category, and so does Nigel Pearson. So, I think that's the type of guy we need. Now, if he's been interviewed, it may be the point you made about him not being known for developing youth is standing in the way of him being the first choice. Mm. But, you know, you can't honestly say without sitting in a room with the Lansdownes and finding out why. My point is more one about timeline, where you've got... The season now, we know it starts 12th of September, as I thought. We know that the guy has now got 6 weeks to come in, do a complete review of the playing squad.
Yeah.
Do a review of the coaches.
Yeah.
Sort out a pile of out-of-contract players or players who will be out of contract in a year's time. That's the big one.
Yeah.
The ones that are out of contract and the loans that have expired are quite easy to deal with. You say, oh, just thanks very much, lad, shake hands, and off they go. And if you want to go in, make an offer for Pereira or Benikofobi or anybody else, you can go and make that offer.
Mm.
But until you've got a manager, say, well, actually, do you know what? No, I don't fancy him. Yeah. I'd rather have player X.
Well, it's like having the money, because if they did go out and get him Pereira, who's a nice enough sort of lad, I'm sure. But, you know, he's going to cost probably £3 million. Or maybe two if we're in post-COVID times. But, I mean, Tom, with normal close seasons, you know, the season finishes at the end. If you're ignoring playoffs, season finishes first week of May, yeah? And then if you're going to can the manager, you can him then, and then they got the first week of July. That's 13 weeks. We are cutting it ridiculously fine, and it looks like we didn't have a plan in place when we sacked Johnson after the Cardiff game, doesn't it, Tom?
Yeah, I completely agree. It feels like we got rid of Lee Johnson we got rid of him virtually straight away after the Cardiff game. And since then, it's just been up in the air. We've given it to Dean Holden. I know there's only 6 weeks until the season starts, but we are at a very different time. So I guess with the 6 weeks now, I'm not sticking up for anybody, but I guess we're going to be a little bit more rushed to put someone in place now rather than if we did have the 13-week break over the summer.
Yeah, I mean, what do you say? That's what you were saying, Ian, really. They just left themselves a ridiculous timeline, you know, in terms of players and contracts, because who's going to be managing Pham and Nicholas Eliasson, you know, who, you know, are widely tipped to be our two most saleable assets, you know, new manager.
Well, they're going
to want to keep them, mightn't they?
Well, they're going to go on holiday, which is what all the players are doing for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That might mean going home.
Yeah.
Depending on how full of COVID, where they're from. I wouldn't think Eliasson might want to go back to Sweden. I don't think he'd want to go and see any relatives in Brazil, that's for sure. I'm not sure about Pham, which part of France he's from, whether it's one of the places it's been badly affected. Bearing in mind, he's currently living in a badly affected country with, I think it's 130 odd deaths today.
Is that right? It's back in triple figures again, right? Okay.
Yeah, the last week has been the highest for several weeks. So, you know, we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah.
You know, without.
But that's a separate issue. They've gone away.
Wear a mask.
I mean, they've gone away for, I think, 2.5 weeks. They're back in training on Monday, the 9th of August, right? So, you know, and yeah, looking at what's being said, you know, that's probably when the new manager is going to start. And unless they're just leading us a dance, you know, it's just that they're not interviewing 8 people. But Monday, the 9th of August, that gives them 5 weeks to get everything together. That really, you know, that really is a short period. Saying that, the transfer window does go on until the 16th of October, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
so they've got a bit.
But then you've got 4 weeks, and I understand some of the players that haven't been involved or couldn't be involved, like Taylor Morley and Walsh, Joe Morrell, are actually going to continue training so they get up to the required level of fitness when the other lads have a 2-week break, which shouldn't affect them in any way negatively, and come back. Obviously, they've been outside of the Ashton Gate bubble, so there's a whole protocol around what has to happen to those players when they, if particularly if they go abroad and come back. So that can't be ignored. So I really don't understand why we're going. I mean, what process did we go through with Lee Johnson before he was employed? None. What process did we go through with Steve Cottrell? None. What process did we go through with Gary Johnson?
I mean, let's look at shortlists. Yeah, let's look at shortlists and how you interview. And as some people know on here, that's what I do for a living. And somebody said 8 seems long for a shortlist. It is. A typical shortlist is 4 or 5 candidates. Yeah. And, you know, you're going to get some people that say thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, I'm happy where I am, which is sort of what maybe Gerard has said to them. Or I'm happy with where I am, and even if you offer me the same money or better, I'm not going to come. Then you end up with a shortlist, let's say, of 5. Your outstanding candidate is Chris Hughton, without a doubt, but he's going to cost you a bit more than you'd want to pay. Then you have 2 or 3 candidates on there that are and for me, that is the likes of Paul Cook and Alex Neil. I said on our Wednesday podcast, I wouldn't be disappointed if either of those had got it. And then at the bottom, you sling in a wild card, somebody whose career is on the way up, you know, that you want to get them on the cheap a little bit. And that's where, in footballing terms, that's the likes of Wellens, Mark Robbins, maybe he's in the middle tranche, and the guy, who's the other guy that was mentioned from the lower levels, not the Newport guy.
Ryan Lowe.
Ryan Lowe, Plymouth. So they're people that would be on the shortlist. Then beyond that, yeah, you really, and this is the other thing, we talked about this earlier, Ian, with, you know, in business, when you're recruiting an ops director, as you have done in the past, right, you don't really know that much about his character and his DNA. And you can look at his CV and you can see he's been here and he's been there. Anybody on that shortlist, anybody, any football manager who's been on that shortlist, their track record is there. It's visible. And some of the things that they get up to off the field is visible as well, you know, that you can see, you know. So it might be that they've interviewed Chris Hughton and it was all very nice, but actually we don't like him. He's got the best CV, but you'd never employ somebody in that you felt the chemistry wasn't right, would you?
Well, no, because I mean, it's a little bit like the old story about Henry Ford, where he was, this company, Ford Motor Company, was struggling absolutely terribly, and he got a fella in. I can't remember his name, but he actually designed the car that saved the Ford Motor Company, which was the Mustang. And he sacked him. And people said, look, hang on, that guy saved your business. He, you know, he's a brilliant designer. He designed the Mustang. Why the hell did you sack him? He said, didn't like him.
Yeah.
I think that's really what happened
with Steve Cottrell. Yeah, that, as we said earlier, that he was in a previous broadcast, he wasn't a Lansdowne appointment. He was recommended by Keith Thor, and his style, right, it contradicted with them. Tom, I've got a question for you. Again, Gregor's saying this in the, I'll call it the syncophatic article that's written in there in Bristol Live today, that Dean Holden's getting an interview because he made a fine job in the last four games of the season, which he sort of did, yeah. But what's your view on that? Is he a contender? Because save two wins against bang average sides, right? Two sides that aren't very good. Yeah, he didn't do anything. What do you say to that, Tom?
No, I don't think he's done anything at all. But hasn't he had job offers from lower league clubs in the past while he's been there as well?
I don't know so much job offers. I think he was linked in. That's like allegedly Lee Johnson had offers when he was there. Until somebody says, here's a contract and this is what we're going to pay you.
I don't think Dean Holden is a contender. I think Gregor did ask him the other night if he's put an application in. I can't remember what he said specifically, but no, Dean Holden for me is definitely not someone to be on the shortlist or even get an interview for me. You should stick to being the assistant. But then again, if we do get somebody in, is Dean Holden and McAllister going to stick around?
Or will Lee Johnson take them even if they were left in a hiatus situation? I mean, Ian, we've seen it in the past. You know, we talked about it with Brian Well, we talked about it with John Ward wanting outside help and somebody being imposed upon him, and then Brian Tinian, you've got to keep Keith Millen, Steve Coppell, you've got to keep Keith Millen again, yeah? Chris Hughton might have come in and said, okay, this is what I want to do, yeah? This is the transfer budget I want, and I've worked out that you can achieve what I want in that respect, but I want to break your wage structure to bring in some really good players. Oh, and by the way, I want Paul Trollope to be my assistant, and he's going to cost you the same as what Holden and McAllister, so I really want those to move out. And our nice board say, well, actually, he's done a fine job in the last few games of the season, you know, so no, you've got to stick with him. Ian, can you imagine that conversation taking place like that?
Yeah, what was Holden's record? Was it four games, won two, lost one?
Drew one?
Yeah.
So that's not a terrible record. If you did that over the course of the season, that's 7 points out of 12, which, like you say, it isn't terrible. But, you know, if you're going to go for Dean Holden, there was absolutely no point in sacking Lee Johnson. What was the point?
Yeah.
You just keep going. If you're going to say, well, we really like what's happening at the moment, apart from the results, you'd have been just as well off saying, well, we'll just keep going until the results change. Unfortunately, we'd lost four on the spin.
Yeah.
Lee had a deserved reputation for having streaks. Some were quite good, but mostly they were bad. Like, when was it 80 lost on the spin? And then Steve Lansdowne, was it putting two fingers up to the fans? Any other chairman would have sacked him. Steve Lansdowne gave him a four-year deal.
Yeah, but then Steve says that he pays the money. So I hear what you say, but I pay all the bills. And this is, you know, we've almost got the worst of both worlds. We've got one of the, you know, we haven't got some despot type chairman, but we've got somebody that, as I think Tom or you said, Ian, earlier, we're doing things the honourable way. I mean, one of the big, one of the threads that's been running quite popular on OTIB today is started to do with the what Huddersfield have done. I mean, they got rid of the Cowleys for reasons that, you know, well, they're obviously not in contention with us, at least I don't think they are. And they've taken 5 days to go up and get in the number two to Bielsa. Tom, I mean, do you think that's a good appointment or risk? I mean, nobody had heard of David Wagner before he went into Huddersfield, but he took them up. What do you think of that, Tom?
I think any management appointment is a bit of a risk, especially going in for somebody straight away. It feels like they haven't sort of scoped the market or looked who's around. However, when the Cowley brothers did leave, I can't remember if it was on TalkSport or Sky Sports, Huddersfield said that they already had someone in mind, and it was Bielsa's assistant, who, reading today, because I've got a few friends who support Leeds, I'm up this way if you couldn't tell by my accent.
he's never. Sort of,
yeah, he's worked under Pochettino before. I can't remember his name, the Huddersfield manager, you're going to have to forgive me. He's worked under Pochettino. He's worked with
Corican, Bielsa, so I think it is. It sounds something like that nature.
He could be a good fit. I guess the proof would be in the pudding, really. I mean, the Cowley brothers, I live about 10, 15 minutes away from Lincoln, and they were like gods around here. Everyone was saying, oh, they can walk on water, they're going to go to Huddersfield, they're going to do wonders, and they didn't really do anything, really. And when they got sort of linked with the Bristol City job, I started to panic a bit, because I thought, oh no, Cowley ball, it's long ball, stick it in the back of the net, that's how they play.
Yeah, I mean...
But at least that's a defined
I
player.
Think, and I think there's
again, here, we can talk about... Go on. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say that the playing style for the last 2 years hasn't been good. I mean, that's where our home record support. It's been a, if you like, not much of a plan A with no plan B or C. So yeah. I think, you know, and their Bristol Live are doubling down on the we may have to be patient line. Why the search for Bristol City's next head coach is taking so long. It's the same article, but with a different picture. And no, I mean, I think that if you're going to go for somebody like the Cowleys or Ryan Lowe or Mike Flynn, nothing against any of them, but then you may as well have stuck with Lee.
Yeah.
Certainly until the end of the season, and had that continuity. I think the problem was it was a bit of a shock when we came back after lockdown and lost four on the bounce. And I think that you just got to the point, they just got to the point where it was a little bit of a panic reaction after the Cardiff game, and they were getting dogs abuse on all the forums and all the rest of it, that they thought, hang on, we better move Lee on. But the fact he gave him a 4-year contract last year, I mean, he stuck with paying Lee's wages for 3 years, or negotiating a lump sum payoff
if he gets another job.
And if I was sat at home on £500,000 a year, I don't think I'd be breaking my neck to get another job.
Well, I think that's what Steve Cottrell probably did for a good part of his time. Or
yeah.
What was Cottrell's contract when he left? I
think he had 2 years left.
Yeah.
Or
so
do
you think if we'd have drawn against Cardiff, let's play out the scenario. Let's say we'd drawn against Cardiff, and then we'd beaten Hull and we'd beaten Middlesbrough and then we'd lost to whoever, you know, do you think they had a plan? Because if you think Lee was on a bit of a downward curve before lockdown, and then three in a row, you've lost it. Do you think it was a knee-jerk reaction on the night of the Cardiff game? Because they had no plan in place.
No, I think it was coming. But, I mean, is it right to say that if we'd beaten Cardiff in Swansea, and, I mean, we only lost the two games 1-0. We didn't lose them 10-0. But if we'd have beaten Cardiff and Swansea...
No, if we'd have beaten both of those, we could have been there. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd have had another 6 points. And what did we finish with? 63?
So
that would give us.
But if we'd have picked up, but you've got to look at the run before the lockdown as well, right?
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if this had happened
prior to the lockdown, if we'd have beaten those two teams, I think we because obviously then Swansea would have had 3 points less, Cardiff would have had 3 points less, and I think they finished on 70, so they'd have finished on 67, and I think we'd have finished on 68.
70. Yeah, yeah.
So that's how what the narrow margins are, but
it's fine margins. That's what they say.
Yeah,
but, that's what they say. But the chairman had said at the start of the season, he said playoffs as a minimum. So Tom, do you think that, let's say we'd have ended up, we hadn't lost the Cardiff game, we'd have got a point there and dropped another, you know, we could have drawn the last four or something silly like that and fallen short, right? Do you think if we'd have finished in, I can't remember where, we're going to finish 12th now, aren't we? Or we have finished 12th. But if we'd have finished 11th, you know, maybe 1 point more than we got at the moment, Tom, do you think he would have said, you failed in what I set as the objective, you're going? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think he'd have got rid of him come what may? Or do you think, as I did and others that I've spoken to, that you might have said, well, it's been a bit of a difficult season and we're going to give him another run? What do you say, Tom?
Yeah, I think we probably would have given him a very early run into next season. But then again, I don't think I really would have wanted to give him another transfer window, give him more money to spend. So, yeah, I think he would have gone at the end of the season, definitely if we didn't get playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the big deal was giving the guy a 4-year contract when things were going badly wrong. And I think that he did exactly the same thing with Gary. And I don't know what it is. And Gary, as we know, got left with a whacking great lump sum payoff. So,
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he did that again.
Who needs a pension? Who needs a pension when you can get one by being friends with the Lansdownes? That's the thing, isn't it, really? Because the Johnson family have done very well over the years, haven't they?
I can't understand his reasoning on doing that. If he'd have said to Lee, look, you've just lost 8 on the spin, I'm going to give you a 1-year rolling contract, and that's the best I can do, because if you go on all the fans' forums, there's probably 70-80% want you out of here, mate. I think that would have had exactly the same effect.
I seem to remember when he got the deal as well. Lansdowne said it was to fend off a club's coming in for Johnson, which I totally can't see, especially when he's just lost 8 or 9 on the spin as well.
No, that's exactly right, Tom. And you know, we had this thing with Gary when he was there. He was linked with every job going, never got any of them. And when he left, I think Peterborough was the next one.
Yeah.
And then it's been downwards ever since.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the level he's managing at now, and I think he's a good manager at that level. With the help of an awful lot of, you know, it's like the Bristol City development squad down there sometimes, isn't it? We've had Jenna down there and Robbie Cundy and players like that. So, you know, I don't know. I think the answer to it all is everything down there is going to be completely up in the air until such time as we have a new manager appointed. And I don't think the fans are going to be in any way accepting of anybody but a top-class appointment. And for that, Reed, for me, one of the experienced guys, and on all the polls on Twitter, OTIB, Bristol City Forum, Ciderheads, whatever you want to call it, Houghton is by far the most popular choice. So,
and the most qualified.
Yes, I would definitely say so. And I think, you know, Chris Hughton's record, and you know, you can get into the likes of, well, what kind of football does he play? What's he doing? But if I said to you now, look, next season we'll win every game 1-0. Some of those 1-0 wins will be with penalties, but we'll go up to the Premier League. Or I'll tell you what, we'll put all the kids in and we'll see how it goes, but we might get relegated. Or it might not go up. What's the vast majority of fans going to say? Well, no, I don't want to do that. So if we had a bit of solid grinding stuff, it's going to be no worse than what we've put up with over the last 2 years.
I think if you could put Houghton in, you're saying next season it has to be top two because you've gone out. Whereas I think if you brought in a Paul Cook, and I'm speaking as an individual here, if you bought in Paul Cook and you said, right, next season, the spine of our side is going to be well, I say Max O'Leary in goal, David Bentley, but Max O'Leary in goal, you know, Taylor Moore, Liam Walsh in midfield. We keep Pham for whatever reason. And actually, you served up a home season where we were rubbish away, but we were free scoring at home, winning 14 home matches, yeah, but maybe only winning 5 away. But the football was good to watch. I think you'd appease a lot of the people who are pissed off, that's the only word to describe it, with the crap that we've been served up since the second half of 2017-18 season. I mean, would you agree with that, Tom, that people would accept stability if the home form was, it was good to go down there, you enjoyed it, and it was kids that were giving 100%. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with instability in the club as well, but I think a lot of our fans, without having a go, are quite fickle, really. And I think a lot of people think we're actually a lot bigger than what we are, and we deserve a lot better than what we get. In my opinion, we're a good top half championship side, and we've been successfully doing that with Lee Johnson, whether or not the football's been good or not. So I think the next appointment, we need to be looking at that next level manager. So for me, as much as I think Paul Cook would be a good appointment, I don't
think anybody. I mean, it's good. It's a good point you raised there, and this is something. Yeah, this is something I was going to. No, I and you know, and again, if it was a Jovanovic, you might think something like that, or some foreign coach. I mean, do you think there's any? I mean, that Gustav Dam. I mean, his track record again off the field isn't that great, Ian, and he's quite a mature guy as well. Well, he's probably the same age as me. But Ian, do you think in that short list of allegedly 7, there's a foreign person on there that might be a bit of a curveball, surprise everybody?
Well, I know there's somebody on there who lives abroad, whether they're an Englishman or a Brit living abroad, or whether it's somebody from abroad. I don't know, because that's what it said in the article. We'll have a season of just playing nice football. No, don't want that at all. The next level for us is get promoted, right? Or at least get in the playoffs. Yeah. Now, if we can do that by playing cosmic football and being the Barcelona of the championship, you won't find anybody happier than me. And if you bring in somebody else, all right, let's say the points deduction is upheld, as it probably will, because that's the penalty for going into administration. And we're going to go down. Then you get into a situation where you might be able to, you know, Paul Cook might be able to walk in Wigan or sell in a few of their better players. I'd like to see us, as I said last summer, sign Kiefer Moore, because, you know, we need that kind of big bloke up front, particularly if Pham decides he's leaving, or we sell him because he only got a year left on his contract.
Yeah.
So I think, no, I'd be saying, right, you're coming in. But the caveat I'd put on it, and I noticed it, Chris Hughton has said to some people about the job, allegedly, it's reported, that he's sure that he can get the club promoted, providing he gets the backing. So we don't want...
I've seen that quote.
We don't want Steve... And it'd be the same for any manager. I don't want Steve to flip from largesse to austerity. I mean, I think any manager that goes in, he's going to be saying to him, right, you can spend what you can bring in plus, think of a number, somewhere between 5 and 10 million.
Yeah.
That's what you've got. Don't be coming to me saying you want to sign, you know, XYZ from Bayern Munich for 27 million, because it's not happening.
No.
And I think that would be fair. I mean, I think it was more than fair to Lee. Every player we sold, that money was reinvested. So we sold Pat, we bought Masengo.
Yeah.
We sold Brownhill, we bought Naki Wells. So that was, if you like, that was how it was. That's the remit for the manager. Now, if Hughton comes in and says, right, I've had a look at the squad, half of them are going, this is what I think I can raise, and Steve Lansdowne, because it will be his decision, says, right, okay, we'll spend that. Then he gives Mark Ashton a list of players and says, right, these are the half a dozen people I want. I mean, I think we need a holding midfield player, a centre forward, and two centre halves, because we've got two centre halves leaving the club in Williams and Benkovic. So I think
that's the kind of guy that you want who's going to drive it. And
Houghton has to be that man. Tom, come back to you on that. Ian said we need central defenders. Interesting point in one of the press articles today about players that were leaving, and it was almost like Nathan, because I was saying earlier in the week to contradict you, Ian, that looking at next season, if we got Taylor Moore, Zach Viner, Baker and Callas, why would you need to bring in a central defender when you've got those four? But I was surprised, Tom, to read that City would consider letting Nathan Baker go. Do you think he's a bit of a liability with X number of retiring injured in the first half to his name over the last 3 years?
Yeah,
I don't know whether you saw that comment, but that surprised me a bit. Who was authorised almost to say, well, we'd listen to offers for Baker?
Yeah, I'd listen to offers for Baker. It does make me laugh. Most first halves I do watch, I see Ian on Twitter saying, oh, here we go again. Is Quaver Crisps or whatever people call him on Twitter these days. Yeah, I'd definitely look at moving him on. That loan season we had him, when it was him and Flint at the back, that was probably some of the best football I've seen him play. Although, yeah, a few games this season, I've seen him go in for a few tackles and I've gone, yeah, he's all right. He's just far too injury prone for me, though, to be a decent championship centre back. I mean, on his day, he's probably up there with the best, but for me, I'd move him on.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's got one year left on his contract. And, yeah, and you've, yeah, got to remember, we originally paid £4.5 million for, yeah, him. Now, we've got, yeah, him, I think, for 3.5 because Villa were desperate for cash when the team.
Well, they owed us money for Codger, didn't they? Yeah, because we never know. Yeah. We'll never know.
So Lansdowne did some kind of deal where he said, well, you know, you can wait for your £2.5 million or I'll give you £1 million now in full and final settlement. And they went for it. So
yeah.
I think you've got that. And I think with all those players, the first conversation is going to be, right, do you want to stay here? Or would you prefer to leave? Let's have an honest conversation. Don't know. Right, okay. Well, don't know, to me, means you might want to leave. So this is the best contract we can offer you.
Yeah.
You've got 2 weeks to sign it or leave. And when I say leave, go on the transfer list, right? Because it might be difficult to start shifting players because, you know, everybody's going to be in the same boat with this COVID and one thing and another. So you then say, right, so we're putting you on the transfer list. Do your best for us while you're here. But, you know, if we get the right offer, get your agent in, sit him down and tell him to get you a move because you've told us that you don't want to stay. Yeah. By either saying, I don't want to stay or I prefer a move, you know, at the age I am, you can dress it up a bit and say, well, the age I am, I'd like a last move. Okay, great. You're on the transfer list. If someone wants you, they're going to come in and they're going to have to pay the money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but if you leave it until the Christmas, which, by the way, is exactly what I think we'll do with nearly all of them.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be getting, you know, £1 million for Baker, £2 million for Pham, and £1 million for Nicky Silas. And you won't even get the money back you paid for them. So I think it needs somebody that's strong and direct and knows where they can go out and get some ready-made, if not long-term, replacements. I mean, the player I thought of as soon as Houghton was linked was Glenn Murray. He'd do the same sort of job for us as Albie did, Aaron Wilbraham.
Yeah, no, and, you're right.
That, he's not going to last 10 years, but that is the type of player you need, a leader, a tough guy, and who's going to drag you through the last 15, 20 minutes of games. That's what you want, you know, that voice.
This business of timing is critical because, again, if we do end up getting a Ryan Lowe type Tom, I mean, you know, the experience, you know, they've not been managers for that long. I mean, Ryan Lowe, let's say, you know, we get turned down by Houghton, he goes elsewhere, yeah? Mm-hmm. Ryan Lowe gets the job, you know, no disrespect to the chap, but he hasn't got a lot of experience. And how is Ashton going to spin that with the fans that if we end up losing, because again, this has been said on a lot of the postings on various forums today that, you know, we had all the palaver with Nicitar that he was joining us and, you know, we took it right down to the wire. And then in the summer of 2015, Andre Gray and Dwight Gale, we seem to be setting unrealistic targets. How do you think Ashton will spin it that, oh, we've appointed Ryan Lowe, we've gone for an up-and-coming manager?
Again,
you wouldn't want to be in his job, would you?
No. I think Ashley has come out with what he always says, like, it's in the DNA, trust the process. I mean, if I'm honest with you, I saw somebody's Twitter today, it made me laugh. He said he wouldn't be surprised if Ashton goes for all the candidates and he makes himself head coach. So,
well, yeah.
I mean, that really would be the last straw, because he's not exactly Mr. Popular at Ashton Gate, not with the fans.
No, you're right. I mean, he's got all the corporate speak. Now, let's talk about a couple of other things, because we've been chundering away for a bit on the obvious one, the manager, which is what the topic was. Austerity, 40 job cuts or whatever at Ashton Gate. Ian, you and I did some numbers earlier today that the cost of Ashley Williams and Afobe's wages conservatively at 30 grand a week, collectively, that's a conservative number, I'm sure, 52 weeks, that's 1.6 million. That would keep those 40 people employed for 2 years. Right now, somebody put a similar post on one team in Bristol and said, these people who've been made redundant have been made redundant because of the downturn in business, so their jobs have gone. It's not a case of preserving them in jobs, but you had quite a few strong views about, you know, the players and the fact that they didn't take a cut, they took a deferral, and therefore, you know, that maybe they could have had a different view.
That's correct. I mean, the reason you make people, well, you're quite right, if someone's made redundant, then it's not the person, it's the job that's made redundant. Although I see there was some headlines in the Evening Post about a restaurant that Jamie McAllister is a co-owner of in Long Ashton, where he seems to have fallen foul of that because they sacked some chefs, or they didn't sack them, they made them redundant. And now they're advertising for the chefs, and there all these things are time limited. But I think as these guys only went in March or something, I don't think you can re-advertise their jobs depending on the way they left the business. But we'll leave that there. No, my view is that yes, we don't at the moment, the way things are, we don't need any staff. You know, we don't need any. I mean, you don't need turnstile operators anymore because it's all electronic. Unless it, you know, you don't need stewards. You don't need. So you could follow that argument through. With anybody, with anybody down there. You know.
I mean,
do you need a media team?
I mean, what exactly? That's the thing with a media. I mean, but what do you call? No. I wouldn't call a turnstile person, because we did the numbers when we did that thing. We assumed that everybody down there was on 20 grand a year, and turnstiles, I would call those casual staff on match days. I think it's in the commercial department where, you know, they've all been on furlough, and all City have done is what a lot of companies are going to do, that when the furlough money stops, bang, you haven't got a job because there's no demand. I mean, Tom, what's your view on, you know, I mean, they don't want this to get political, but City have only really done what a lot of companies are going to do. They've just shed themselves of staff that they don't need in as things are at the moment, haven't they? Yes?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I've not read that much into it because it's not really something I like getting into, if I'm honest. However, yeah, I tend to agree. If we don't need the staff, then I don't see why they should be there, to be honest, as well as getting paid.
Yeah. I mean, Ian,
point was that if the players, instead of the players were the more highly paid players, I'm not talking about the kids in the academy or anybody like that, or perhaps your, you know, your Joe Morells or whatever, but the average wage down there, if you work it out, is about 14 grand a week. Now, if you're on
players'
wage. So yeah, if you're on that kind of money, you can very easily take a 4 grand cut. And bear in mind, you're not taking a 4 grand cut. You're taking it. It won't even work out 4 grand over a year because you're only taking that cut for, 6 months top? So we'll call it 2. And you could take that cut, and that would enable the club to pay some people, even if it's only up until October, to keep them in a job, which they all had jobs before. So if you needed them all before, you're going to need them when the new season kicks off. You're absolutely going to need them because – you know, if you're not, why were they there in the first place?
Exactly.
And it's not 5 or 6, it's about 40.
Yeah, but you say it's a bit interesting. You say you're going to need them. Yeah, but are you going to need them in the current format? Because again, they've said they've
no. But you'll need them in October when
you want British Airways. Do you say right? We're going to re-employ you, and instead of being on 25 grand a year, you're going to be on 15. Take it or leave it. Yeah, but in saying that, look, the new season has been confirmed that it's going to start on the 12th of September. But I also read somewhere for the first time that they're going to restrict entry to grounds to 1/3 of the stadium capacity, which in Ashton Gate terms is about 8,500. Now, if we've got 14,000 season ticket holders, how is that going to work? Are they going to say to all the, and I'm one of those, all the corporate people, you guys can come, we can't give you any food, but you're guaranteed to all the games? Or are they going to say people can come in rotation, you know, bona fide? Because I don't see the corporate lounges being open, and I don't see, you know, which company is going to advertise perimeter at Ashton Gate in, you know, when they're going to be running out of money. Advertising is a discretionary spend. So, you know, starting on the 12th of September, we're not going to be walking back into the grounds then. Do you think, Ian and Tom, we're going to be walking back into the grounds?
No.
No, I don't. I mean, they've said already, Johnson said October, hasn't he? And, you know, and that's a guess. Because if we get a second spike, we could be locked down again and we're not going to be back in there until Christmas. So, you know, it's all ifs, buts and maybes. But my point was more of a general one. I mean, Lee Johnson and Mark Ashton both took pay cuts.
Yeah.
The players took a deferral. And I just think morally, that's the wrong thing to do. They should have took a cut, and the cut could have been used to keep some of the people down there on furlough. I mean, you've got to remember, the government's been picking up 80%. 80%.
No, you're right. You're right. So they could have kept the people on. They could have kept the people on. Yeah, they could have kept the people on.
If they're on the minimum wage, Dave, they're on the minimum wage, and the government's picking up 80% of it. I mean, City's cost is absolutely buttons, and it's going to make no difference at all in the scheme of things. Now, if they start laying off people like Lisa Knight, John Lansdowne, Mark Ashton, poor blimey, that's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
So you know, it's all a matter of you know, if you want to save money and you go in to do turnarounds, as you know, I do business turnarounds, you don't start with the cleaners.
No.
And you know, I just think the whole thing, I don't think it was that's the right thing to do. No. And we originally thought that that's why they didn't want to announce a new manager who's going to be on, let's say he's on the same money as Lee Johnson, who's on $500,000 a year, at the time when you're laying off people on the minimum wage, who are going to have to...
As we said earlier, though, if you say, right, you know, that it's a loss-making venture anyway, Bristol City, and last year we went for it, we had a massive wage bill. If you just had two less players on the playing squad, yeah, of the weekly wage of Messrs. Afobe and Williams, for example, right, that 30 grand a year, 30 grand a week saving equates to $1.5 million. You could almost keep everybody on board for another year at that lower level just to keep the infrastructure intact. Yeah. And just losing two players off a bloated squad, yeah, is no big deal, is it, at the end of the day? Because we have got too many. We've had this argument before, too many average players rather than a few stars. And I mean, bringing in Chris Hughton at $1 million a year against Leeds $500,000, it doesn't look good when you're making 40 people redundant. I mean, Tom, Tom's left us, but thanks for him joining in. His other half is giving the eye to leave the house. Welcome as well while we're talking to Les, who says can't understand the dodgy accents. I think he might mean Tom there. Les, your contribution's welcome if it is. Georgie BCFC entered the studio. Welcome to you. Cookie said a few minutes ago, I agree with Ian. I read an article last night about all the players who could be released by Brighton. One of those was Glenn Murray, and the fact that he could be our championship Wilbraham. Beard is in the studio. Knighty, Belter, Mark James, Shuffle. Symbolise said, this is about half an hour ago, somebody sounded like they just took a slash. Nice. I think that was somebody making themselves a glass of water there. Neil Wellington, thanks for entering if you're still listening. And I think I've already said 90. But Ian, yeah, we're right. I mean, these cuts, you've got to start at the top. And the top, in terms of most impact, is player wages, isn't it? Yeah. So just drop, don't, you know, what was the cost of Benkovic and, you know, the other loan player? And Henriksen left, but, you know, that's how you save money, don't you? And keep the little people.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to look, you could, well, you've got to look at it too. I mean, Afobe, Stoke paid £12 million for him. So there's no way he's on any less than about 35, 40 grand a week, because when he joined them, they were in the Premier League, or he's a Premier League player. I think he came from Bournemouth. So you've got Afobe, you've got Benkovic, who Leicester paid 13 million from Dynamo Zagreb for. Then you've got Pereira, who's playing for Benfica. So I wouldn't have thought he was on fantastic money, but I mean, Benfica are a big club. So you've got those three. You've got Ashley Williams, who I'm guessing for us to sign him would have wanted 15, 20 grand
15,
a week.
15, yeah.
Yeah, let's say 15 as he was out of contract and didn't have a club. So, you know, that's an awful lot of money. But then again, you've got that limited cost window, haven't you? You've got to say, right, okay, we're paying out this, but guess what, guys? In, as it would have been, June, that all stops. That all goes away. And by the way, Nicky Mainpa's going, Corey Smith's going. They're not on buttons either. Although I've gone on record saying I would offer Corey a new shorter term contract and keep him because I think he's a handy player to have around. But what, you know, this is part of what the new manager's got to do, because he might go in there and say, well, you know, what do I want Eliasson for? I'm not going to play with wingers. Not that we do now, and we've probably got six wingers at the club. So, you know, that's what the new manager is. Conversely, you don't want to. Yeah. Conversely, you don't want to let the bloke go, and then a new guy comes in and says, oh yeah, I'm 4-4-2 all day long. Yeah. And then you go, oops.
I mean, somebody made a point on here the other day. You talk about over-egging it because, you know, backroom staff and God knows what else. You know, we've got directors of football, head coach, assistant head coach, We've got two of those. Somebody made a good point the other day that we had four goalkeepers on the books, right? Bentley, Mempa, O'Leary and Gil Martin, because somebody pointed out Gil Martin isn't a bloody coach, sorry, the goalkeeping coach, and I'd forgotten about him, is a guy called Pat Mountain. Why do we need four goalkeepers? We let one go out on loan.
You don't, but you've left out Jojo Woollacott.
So
we've actually got five. Yeah.
Let's look at their wages there, right? Bentley's got to be on 10 grand a week. I mean, John Stebb was earning that because I heard that from somebody. Yeah. Well, I heard that directly through. John Bentley's on 10k a week. Max O'Leary. Okay, he's been out on loan. What's Max O'Leary on? 4k a week? Yeah, because he's come back now. Yeah. What's Gil Martin earning, Ian? What would you say Gil Martin's on?
I don't know. A couple of grand a week.
I'll be harsh and call it a grand. What was Nicky Mempa on?
I would have guessed somewhere between 5 and 10 because he came from Brighton. No, he came from Brighton, didn't he?
Let's call it 7k. Yeah. And Jojo Woollacott, he's on a grand as well, right? So 1, 7, 8, 9, 4 is 13. 23 grand a week on bloody five goalkeepers.
Yeah, and you've got
That's a million a year.
Yeah, but that's why our wage bill is 101% of income. But, and worse than that. It's been round about 125%. And if you ran a business like that, the bank would call you in tomorrow.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at it, you say Bentley's our number one. Okay, O'Leary's out on loan, right? We got Mempa, so you got a good number one and number two, right? But, you know, you then got Jojo Woollacott, who's on the verge of the first team squad, but you say you don't need Gil Martin and Pat Mountain. You have one, you don't have both. Yeah, would you agree with
that? That's correct. And Gil Martin wasn't, you know, when he was joining us, he came from Colchester. And if you converse with Colchester fans via Twitter or whatever, they were saying he was the worst goalkeeper they'd ever had. And we're talking about Colchester, not Man United.
Well, you remember Marinovic. Hey, we got somebody else joining us here. Here he is. He's come in. Let's let him in the studio. Les, welcome.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. You've been talking about the dodgy accents, and I'm guessing since Ian and I are both Bristol boys, him being the one of the real name, you're talking about Tom, who's left us because he's had to go elsewhere. Oh, is that right?
I don't know. I don't know who's who. I was just listening.
All right. So what do you want to contribute, Les? We've talked about the match. What's your sort of quick 30-second wrap on why we haven't got Houghton yet? As I said, yet. Do you think he's going
to
come?
The reason we ain't got Houghton yet is because we spent 3 weeks trying to get Steven Gerrard. And what they've done is they pretended there's some big recruitment thing going on when, in fact, they were just trying to get him. That's what I think.
What do you think about that, Ian? Were we doing a Nicotar with Gerrard, putting all our eggs in one basket?
What? Do you mean Nketiah?
No, don't split hairs, mate.
I thought you could start talking about Nickelodeon then, Avatar or something.
I see where Les is coming from on that. I mean, do you think that's true? Interestingly, because Vasserman, who are the agents that seem to have a Jorge Mendes control with Ashton, like Jorge Mendes does with Wolves, right? Vasserman are Gerrard's agents, and they are, it's been documented in the press this week, I think, Ashton's preferred agent who does all our deals. Do you think Les is right with that view?
He could well be. The honest answer is we don't know, do we? Because there's only three people who actually know, and that's the two Lansdownes and Mark Ashton. Final decision maker would be Steve Lansdowne.
Yeah.
Always is and always will be. Well, he's the man that signs the big checks. I think Les could possibly be right. We did seem, and we've done it before, to put all our eggs in one basket. And Nketiah is a great example of that. You put all your eggs in one basket, then all of a sudden you're scrabbling around at the 11th hour and making a choice from what's left. And I'm afraid that could be the way that we go with the manager. I mean, they've interviewed Houghton, and they should know now in their heart of hearts whether he's the fella that they want. I mean, whether they like him or not. I mean, you know, you're not employing somebody to run a glee club. You're running a football manager who wants to get...
Yeah, go on, Les. Yeah. What I mean, if you had a short list of three now, which didn't have Houghton on it because he's gone off.
Well, firstly, let me just say, if we wanted Chris Houghton, we would have had him 2 weeks ago because he came out and said he was interested in the job, but then we heard nothing because we were too busy trying to get Steven Gerrard. I mean, this is a bloke who's turned down what 4, 5, 6 jobs in the last year, turned down Championship teams, and we're Bristol City and think we can do better than Chris Houghton.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's a bit of arrogance about this, about the football club. And what will happen is if we leave it too long, he'll end up saying, you know what, I was interested, but I'm going to go somewhere else. Because there'll be plenty of clubs in for him. Do you know what I mean?
I think so, you're right. I think that's 100% right.
If we really wanted him, we would have had him by now.
Yeah. No, you go for the man to do the job. I mean, that's what I do for a living, right? And I had a client, he said, I want this. We want our business to do that. Go out and find somebody. And I first, you know, one phone call, didn't know the guy. Well, I probably did. I met him about 7 years ago. I said, got a job here. It's not in a great location for you, but it's a chance to do this, this, and this. And the guy, he got offered the job. Yes, I came up with two or three other people on the shortlist. That's doing the job properly, right? Yeah, but I found the man to do the job. But Les, let me ask you a question. If Houghton tells them to do one, right?
Yeah.
Who of the remaining candidates? Give me three names would be any good, you accept. Mm-hmm. You'd say it ain't Houghton, but it's okay.
Right. My first choice throughout this whole thing, right, was Paul Cook. My reason for Paul Cook was because he plays good football. His teams have a proper philosophy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's got proven success in the clubs that he's done it. Where was he? Portsmouth, he got him up.
Yeah.
Where else? Ireland.
Yeah. Chesterfield, Sligo Rovers. Yeah.
Sligo. Everywhere he's been successful. And he plays good football.
Yeah.
He ain't a Lansdowne man, though, is he? He ain't a Lansdowne man.
And, and why do you say that? Because he's sort of got a touch of the Steve Cottrells about him. He's not Mr. Mr. Syrupy Talk and what have
you.
Yeah?
Listen, he's quite aggressive and he's not a very polished character, is he?
Well, it's interesting you use that term polished, yeah, because, you know, that's why I was alluding to earlier. I can't believe Robbie Fowler's on the shortlist and obviously John Terry's probably.
He's not on the shortlist, is he? Robbie Fowler ain't on the shortlist for any championship club in this country.
Well, Gregor was alluding to the fact that he might have had an interview. So if they're saying they've got...
I think that's bollocks.
You think that is?
No, no, they didn't. They didn't say he'd had an interview. They just said Robbie Fowler had applied, and so did the Cowley brothers. But, you know, there's been over 50 applicants. And, it's, you know, it's like all the time you get people applying for a job and, you know, one bloke, oh, yeah, I'd like to be the manager of Bristol City and he's a milkman.
Can I just say, in terms of the top three, in terms of the top three, you're saying,
I don't think
there's a lot of depth to the field. People say like Mark Robbins, he's had a good season at Coventry, but he's been sacked from all the other jobs he's been in.
Yeah,
and then people say Gerrard again. What success has he had in Scotland? It's been limited. Yeah. He's kept the second best team second. And I appreciate he's a big name. He'll get the players up, you know what I mean? The players will play for him because it's Steven Gerrard. But in terms of actually getting the right man for the job, in my opinion, there's only two people. And that's Chris Hughton because of his track record of success and Paul Cook because of his track record of success. I don't think anyone else...
How about Nigel Pearson?
Again, I don't think he's a Lansdowne man. I think he's too much of a...
I don't think any of the three are. I think you're looking for... You know, if you want a Lansdowne man...
I think
you're looking for Lee Johnson too, aren't you?
No.
Might as well have kept Lee Johnson one.
Chris Hughton is very much a Lansdowne man. He's very polished. He's very professional. He'll give the club a good name in the way he presents himself. Okay, he's not young, but in terms of the brand, I think
I agree with what you say there. I do agree with what you say there. And it's coming back to this polish thing, isn't it? Because, you know, we all know that... Well, so we all know, I took the view that Luke Ayling got binned out at a club because he was guilty by association with the piss bottle incident at the Cheltenham Gold Cup. We see, and it goes back to what Gregor was saying, we like to do things the right way, yeah? And everybody thinks Mark Ashton's Mr. Smoothie. Ian, do you think, you know, we are a bit of a, you know, we're trying to be too nice in what we do with all of this? What do you think?
Well, I think I wouldn't use the word nice. I'd use the word corporate.
Yeah.
And it's nice when people say, well, they were a great club to deal with. But, you know, I noticed all those people had bought something from us. They bought a player from us. So they might have come for a player that, I mean, Warnock said when he signed Pack, I was amazed that he'd be available. Bristol City made him available. That was, you know, that was a comment from Warnock. So I think if you look at Chris Hughton, he's got the credentials. He comes across very well. I've listened to him in conversation. I've listened to him doing a podcast when I thought he was coming in, and he seems a very strong. He's a London boy, very strong, educated guy.
Yeah,
and I don't think he'd have any messing. He's our age. And I think sometimes you need that, but it's all about he hasn't done the best presentation or something like that. But you've got to look beyond those things. You know, it's a bit like when somebody has a psychometric test. That's a guide. It doesn't it informs the decision. It doesn't make the decision.
Yeah. Les, one name we haven't mentioned, and he was in action, in a manner of speaking, at Ashton Gate on Wednesday night, was Alex Neil. Now, he did take Norwich up, whether he took a side up that Chris Hughton had built, I'm not sure with my dates there. He'd done it with Hamilton. He's done a bloody good job with Preston over the years on less money than Lee Johnson had, He snapped at the interviewer on Wednesday night when asked about the job here. He's quite dour. Is he? And he's young. He's 39. Yeah. What would you say about Alex Neil's credentials, Les?
Well, listen, right, he got him promoted, didn't he? He got Norwich promoted and he's got Preston just outside the playoffs. He's a good manager. Whether he's this inspiring figurehead that Bristol City fans want, of course he's not.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to inspire, you know, these players to go up another level because he's Alex Neil and he ain't Steven Gerrard or Chris Hughton. Is he a good championship manager? Of course he is.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, if he was employed next week or whatever, the majority of Bristol City fans would be like, oh, yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's a solid appointment. He's a good championship manager. Yeah. But he ain't Chris Hughton.
No. But look, I think we're agreed. I mean, we need to wrap up now because we've been going on for a bit. I'll edit my bit about saying about Robbie Fowler at the beginning, Ian. Thanks for pointing that out to me, that he didn't get done for whatever. I think, I mean, if we have, we haven't named names with a foreign coach, we've talked a lot about the limited time. If it was a foreign coach that we don't know, I could see a foreign coach coming on board and saying, you need to stick with Dean and Jamie because they know the players, and we've got Benny Lennartsen Mark II scenario. Do you think that could happen, Ian, that, you know, we go for a foreigner and we keep the guys that know the players and know the setup to get the continuity? And that's well, like Christophe Paul.
Well, the idea with this structure that we've got with the with Mark Ashton, director of football, and all but name, is that if the coach goes, no one else does. So everybody else stays in place and you just replace that one person. The failure with that is that anybody that comes in will want to appoint their friends. And it is their friends. It's not, you know, the very best coach they know. It's their mate who they know they can trust, and he's not going to stab them in the back.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at the guy at Brentford, who I think's done brilliantly this year, and when you look at a model for us to follow, I never thought I'd be saying this, but Brentford would be a good model for us to follow.
Yeah.
Nobody had heard of him before he joined Brentford, but they've obviously got a director of football who knows, who's got a great number of contacts that I don't think we've got. And you've only got to look at their transfer activity to see how well they've done, and then look at how well we've done. And we haven't done terribly, but we certainly haven't done as well as them. So I would say any manager is a risk. And going along with what Les said, the sort of managers we're talking about mitigate your risk. And in any business, you've got to mitigate your risk as much as you possibly can.
You've got to do that.
Because we don't want to be, in a year's time, we don't want to be in League One and paying three managers.
No, we don't. Ian, I mean, this has been a good session. I can say by the number of people that are in the room, we look as though we've had a record number of listeners, whether that'll be reflected in downloads. Thanks to Les for his contribution. Like to have you in again, Les, because you put some good views across on there. There's another person in the studio. A couple of other comments have come in. Yeah, Cookie pointed out Jojo Wallacott. We did pick him up. That was goalkeeper number five. Belter said Bentley will be on more than 10k, I'd imagine. You could well be right there from that perspective. Look, we will do a new manager special whenever that happens. I think we've done it to death tonight. It's been our longest that we've done so far, but plenty to talk about. Any final words from you? Any thoughts, Ian? Do you think it will be another 7 days or longer or less?
I've got to the point now, Dave, where I really honestly don't know. I've got no idea what they're doing. I think the only thing that could preempt it is possibly a phone call from one of the candidates to say, look, have I got the job? Because if not, I've got something else.
Yeah.
And that might preempt it. I think if they said it's going to take 8 to 10 days, it'll take 8 to 10 days. The manager needs to be in place when the players come back.
Yeah.
And then he's got 4 weeks to get us ready for the start of the season and sort out the squad. So good luck with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ian, a pleasure as always. Thanks to everybody that's listened. Thanks to all the supporters of this. Still got a long way to go before we catch up one stream in Bristol. But as I say, they seem to be doing them after every match, which I don't think they were doing before. But I say we're all men of a certain age. Well, certainly you and I are men of a certain age. But we want people to contribute like Les did for the first time. Welcome to him and Tom, for that matter. So, guys, many thanks for your contribution this evening. All the best. Cheers, then.
All the best, Dave. Good luck.
Cheers, mate. Bye.